We are thrilled now to be joined by another man who is being inducted into the PGA Professionals Hall of Fame later on, well, next month. He's Michael Hebron. He is the he's the master professional at Smithtown Landing Golf Course in Smithtown, New York, out on Long Island. Michael, welcome to the show.
Good evening, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Thrilled to have you on, and congratulations on this great honor.
It is. It's a bit of a surprise, and it was an honor and appreciated. I just, when you enjoy what you do for a living, and you get to travel all over the world, and then they want to give you an award, it doesn't seem fair. I'm thrilled that I didn't realize anybody was watching. I was just being Michael.
Sometimes that's the best way. Sometimes that's the best way, Michael. I want to ask you, because I think a lot of our listeners have this same question. You are a PGA master professional, and we hear the term. What does that mean? What are the qualifications? What do you have to do
to earn that title? The PGA Education Department, in its wisdom, set up a program that you could take extra courses, do extra workshops to add to their basic education program to give the men and women in the PGA who had the curiosity or the to expand their education within the PGA structure, and it was like getting a master's degree at college. So it required a paper, it required going to a rules workshop, a club repair workshop, a teaching workshop, and a business workshop to kind of put cream or add extra education to the education you had gotten from the PGA and what you had been picked up along the way while working. I don't want to misspeak. I don't think you can apply for the program until you've been a PGA Class A professional for 10 years. So in the PGA's wisdom, knowing that things change and knowing that people like to keep re-educating themselves, they started this master's program. And I think I was number 26.
Really?
Number 26 professional to take advantage of that. And in my book, the first book I wrote, See and Feel the Inside, Move the Outside, was the first book accepted as a thesis by the PGA Masters program.
Really? That's very
cool. It's a very thorough program. The PGA realizes that the industry is changing and that it doesn't hurt to have extra education.
Well, let's talk about how much it's changed in your career, because the game that you grew up on, the game that you started playing and then eventually started teaching, is very different than the game that we see now. What, in your mind, are the biggest changes?
Well, do we have to be politically correct on this?
No, sir. No, sir.
I think the game of golf and the sport of golf are two different products today. The sport of golf is an ego-driven exhibition, how far, how low, what clubs do I own, etc., etc., where the game of golf is meant to be an experience. And I think that there are people out there who feel like if they don't shoot a particular score, they don't deserve to be on the golf course. And that's not my view or the view of people who are trying to grow the game. One of the consistent things about business is inconsistent. And business uses inconsistency as a positive. Hire extra, let people go, what inventory to have. And school systems and sports coaching use inconsistency as a negative. And they've created this, and when you go about it that way, and when people do not understand the tour players using the same swing he used when he was 10 years old, he just learned to do something different with it. He polished it. He wasn't broken. He didn't need fixing. And people who get the impression that every shot they hit is failure are playing a sport that's ego-driven as opposed to having an opportunity to enjoy the great game of golf as an experience. Games are meant to be experiences, to enjoy each other's company. And some days, well, guys win golf tournaments. They'll have a couple of scores that are low and then one that's not so low. So even at the highest level, the game is inconsistent, and the ones that are successful accept the inconsistency as part of the game and just go on the next day and realize that there's it's going to have its ups and downs because inconsistency is part of who we are as human beings and as players. Actually, the putts you miss are more valuable than the putts you make. You know, the bad business deal or the wrong answer on a test really is the opening part. And when people are given the opportunity to understand that as opposed to criticizing themselves, and I think today the media does a good job. The tour is very important to golf. But they're not talking to each other for the most part. It's a very serious picture. And I'm not sure that that gives the picture that grows the game, where you're out with your buddies and enjoying it. They're focusing so hard sometimes. Focus is not real good. That's why you remember the answer when you leave the test. Paying attention is a little bit different than over-focusing. I know you're familiar with my background, and I've been studying the way the brain learns for about 20 years. When I was his teacher of the year in 1991, I believe, I was just teaching with one side of the story, the golf swing. You know, and people said I was really smart about the golf swing. But then when I started to study learning and how we actually learn things, by combining the art of teaching with the science of learning, it becomes a very different experience. So getting back to your original question, I think when you push perfection, you push as over enjoyment of the game. I think PGA should stand for pleasurable game for all, not perfect golf alignment. Nobody has perfect golf alignment. I think people in the golf business are probably in trouble. People in the golfer business are not. And most of the PGA professionals I know are in the golfer business. Amateurs of the game. Amateurs were the first players. Amateurs are on committees that run tournaments, to raise money. Amateurs are our customers. Amateurs are the game. And we would not have golf without amateurs. And when you realize that amateurs are the game, you run your business or your life based on golfers, while the bottom line can be important at sometimes, it can get in the way of, again, running. People in the golf business have had a tough time. People in the golfer business aren't in trouble. They're doing much better when they take care of their customers.
We're talking to Michael Hebron. He is a master professional, PGA master professional, and the professional at Smithtown Landing Golf Course. Michael, clearly this is something that that you have given a tremendous amount of thought to. You mentioned that you had written one book. Do you have more than one?
Yeah, I've written five books, and I have a new one coming out in the spring. The first man I worked for years ago, Gene Black, a wonderful professional, probably parallel from Bob Ford today or Dow Kessler, two outstanding club professionals. Gene was a wonderful man, and he said to me one day, he said, "You're a little different." I said, "Well," I said, "maybe that's a good thing, Gene." And he asked me to write. He suggested that I write, you know, once a week, once a month, whether I was going to a clinic or reading a book or whatever. And I've written every day since, whether it's a paragraph or underlining a book I've read. So Gene left us several years ago, and he's missed dearly. But I've always been curious. His motivation is curiosity. We read a book for a couple of hours, and people say, how are you motivated to do that for a couple of hours? Anything, you know. And really, the motivation is because you were curious. You know, what's on the next page? What's a different way I can hit this shot? So somewhere along the line, I got an extra dose of curiosity and have always stayed curious. And that's when I started to study the brain. I've had 90 hours of classes up at Harvard. They have a Connecting the Mind and Brain to Education Institute. Eric Jensen also, who runs Teaching with the Brain in Mind seminars. I've had about 80 hours of his education. And by combining the nature of learning with the nature of golf, we create a very safe environment where people aren't walking away thinking about what they did wrong. They're walking away with a positive message of what to do. And that's the whole thing, to make a safe environment for people. The same 10 numbers we knew in kindergarten built a rocket ship. We just learned to do something different with them. So nobody's broken when they show up on a lesson today. They are where they are, but you work. And the teaching environment is usually built on an assumption that something's missing or not something needs to be. The learning, developing environment works with what shows up and develops it. And it does it in a positive way where you work on what's working. You don't point out what's wrong. Tommy Bolt once said that when Ben Hogan practiced, he only practiced what was working. He didn't go down to practice what was, and I got to spend some time around Hogan. He didn't go down to fix anything. He worked on in a positive way. In my view, when people are trying to have a consistent golf swing, we never have the same shot, so why would you work on a consistent golf swing? Consistent emotion, consistent pattern, consistent tempo, but you want to practice in a random way where you're hitting some hooks, hitting some fades, hit it high, hit it low. Standing there trying to hit the same shot that you'll never have on the golf course isn't compatible with the way the brain learns. If you want somebody to learn, say, 10-foot putts, have them hit a bunch of 8-footers and a bunch of 12-footers, a bunch of 8-footers and a bunch of 12-footers. And they get the brain gets the feeling of short and long, and then finds the right distance automatically. I just recently read a paper about Shaquille O'Neal. Scientists would like Shaquille O'Neal, when he was playing, to practice foul shots from 16 feet and 14 feet to get the brain to understand long and short. Don't stand there and try and get something right. Dr. Robert Borg, who runs the Learning Center at UCLA Learning Lab, wants you to introduce mistakes in lessons. It's very, very important. Struggle is the most important thing of learning. And a lot of people practice in trying to get it right and fixing things. That's not the way the brain learns. The brain learns from our mistakes, and one of the great ways of practicing, and I have a quote in Bobby Clampett's book, Jack Nicklaus has quoted, I introduce mistakes when I'm practicing all the time. So I want to know what that feels like as opposed to what the good one feels like. So it's all based, my approach today is all based on how the brain actually learns things, and it learns it in a positive way. It doesn't learn from negative ways.
You know, a lot of our listeners are from the north. They're in traffic right now. They haven't had an opportunity to play much golf lately, and inevitably, and I don't know why this is, and this is the question that I have for you, Michael, is that when you come back to the game after a layoff, why is it that so often that first round back is excellent, and then the next four or five subsequent rounds you really struggle with?
Well, my first response is there's probably no expectations, and they're out there just getting the cobwebs out of their body, and they're just feeling. They haven't put any expectations on themselves, and may not even be keeping score. One of the neat things I smile about is when a tour player's had several good weeks in a row, and he's kind of interviewed, and he maybe was in leading the tournament in the third round, and he doesn't win the tournament. And he's interviewed, and he said, you know, I've been really playing well. I know what to go home and work on. That confuses me. They've been a world-class player for 15 years. They should go home and just play. There's nothing to work on. The reason they had it was the natural inconsistency of the game. There's nothing wrong with the golf swing. It's just part and parcel to not every shot's going to be the best. I mean, I'm not the first person to say this. Golf is a game of misses, and how you handle your misses. And I just think this new generation of media, this new generation of perfect, is not helping grow the game. I think that when people understand they're going to be inconsistent and find a place for that, they're raising families, playing once in a while. And I understand people want to do as best they can when they go out there. They may have a national bet or working on their handicap, but it's a game. You know, it's a game. No, it's a game of surprises. Okay, every shot's a surprise. Every shot's a surprise. Nobody can predict the score they're going to shoot when they're on the first tee. Tee it up, play a game, take what it gives you, learn from that experience, use it as feedback, and not failure. You know, the Irish kid gets 10 points. The family wants to know why it wasn't 15. Maybe the Italian kid makes the team. They have a party, and some kids try out, and the family buys them a car. That's the deal, to be very positive, positive, positive about everything. Bogoslav told me once that when he was working with his dad, the only shots they talked about in junior golf were the good ones. No matter what he shot, they talked about the four or five good shots he hit. That's why Davis has the attitude he has when he plays. He's a wonderful player. And I would almost think Freddie Couples has that attitude. He kind of takes what it gives him. The whole process of trying for perfection, it's not available. The whole deal is every shot's a surprise. You can't control your score, and to have process goal, not outcome goals. Probably that first round of golf was a process goal. They went out. I'm going to enjoy myself. I'm going to take my time between each shot. I'm going to swing smooth, and I'm just going to get back into it. So those are process goals. An outcome goal would be thinking about a particular swing position, thinking about a particular score, and all the research says we should have process goals. And all the new research says we should pay attention to the golf club. You know, we didn't learn to use a hand. We learned to use pens and steering wheels and toothbrushes. Gabriel Wolf, the great scientist at the University of Nevada, attention and motor skill learning. If you pay attention to what to do with the golf club, you're more successful than paying attention to what to do with your body. The ball flight laws were very, very useful in the 21st century, in the 20th century. Today, I think there should be the golf club laws. Where's the shaft? Where's the head? Where's the face? And everybody does it different. Golf basics are not grip, stance, and posture. They're personal choices. The fundamentals of golf have to do with the golf club. The fundamentals of writing have to do with what you do with the pen. Fundamentals of steering a car have to do with what you do with the gas pedal, the brake pedal, and the steering wheel. Golf clubs have a shaft, the head, and the face. And the swing model is the golf course. The golf course is telling me what club to hit. The golf course is telling me what kind of a shot to play. The swing model is not some tour player that some folks are trying to copy perfectly. The golf course speaks to us, and that's the swing model. It's saying play the ball back, play it up, use your putter, use your wedge, as opposed to trying to copy some expert golfer, which they're probably not trying to do in that first round of golf in the spring. They're just going out, and I think that would be my guess why things fall into place.
Michael, we're talking to Michael Hebron. He is the PGA Master Professional at Smithtown Landing Golf Club on Long Island in Smithtown, New York.
My winters at the Wanderers Club in Wellington, Florida, which is right in the West Palm Beach area.
Oh, well, fantastic. I'll be down there for the Honda next week.
That'd be great.
I wanted to ask you this because I'm dying to hear your particular answer, having listened to this conversation for the last few minutes. We often hear the comparison between golf and life, and how golf mirrors life in so many different ways. And you being not only a scientist but a bit of a philosopher yourself, what does that mean to you when people make the comparison that golf mirrors life?
Well, I can't, speaking for myself, everything is based on emotions. Everything is based on the story you tell yourself. You know, if you think the guy in the front of the room is brilliant, he's brilliant. If you think he's not so smart, he's not so smart. So when you're on the golf course, it's no different. Everything is based on emotions and the story we tell ourselves. And in life, the people who go through life telling them negative story, the brain wires themselves. The first observation of anything becomes negative. Now, science has shown that you can change your attitude. You can change your attitude. So golf, when you're learning something, the brain is checking physical and emotional safety along with new learning. All three things are going on at the same time. So if I am a salesman, if I am a parent, if I am in any walk of life, if you approach it in a positive way, you're probably going to get a higher return on the investment of your time and resources than if you approach it in a negative way. And with life, as with golf, there's going to be some inconsistencies. So when you understand inconsistencies, I would say if you asked me for just one ideal, it would be about get folks to understand inconsistencies. That it's feedback, it's not failure, it's feedback for future reference. There is no new learning. You know, we're going up to do business with a company tomorrow. It's going to be like the company we had last week. You know, the shot I have on 18, it's going to be like the shot I had on 14. Everything is based on a past experience. We're not swinging the golf club. Our memory is swinging the golf club. We have negative thoughts about life, but we have negative thoughts about our golf. What's with controlling it? Trying not to hit a bad shot instead of just standing up, swing the weight of the golf club. I think the big picture in basketball is shoot up. I think the big picture in tennis is get it over the net. The big picture in business is make a profit. The big picture in golf is swing the weight of the golf club. We only hit bad shots when the golf club is not swinging. It has a beginning and an end, and you just swing the weight of the golf club. And if you add extra employees, extra movements to a swinging motion, that's when we hit shots that we're not particularly happy with. So from my view, it mirrors life in a way that the same energy that exists in a positive thought helps you in life, the same negative energy that hurts you in life can hurt you in golf. And everything is based on the story you tell yourself and emotions. We've had the best player in the world go through an emotional time the last couple of years, and his performance dropped off. When people are in an emotionally good space. Phil Mickelson, God bless him, you know, when he first started being Phil on tour, people didn't know what to make of his way of doing it. But Phil has so much confidence that he'll put two drivers in his bag and not care what the press says about it. He'll change putting styles from week to week and not care. He must be the most positive guy in the world to find a place that he can take public observation of being on stage every week and not knowing what's going to come so soon. I mean, he must be a fabulously emotionally balanced guy to do that.
That is such a wonderful perspective, to break it down in that way. You were recently, or I don't know how recently, but were featured on Charlie Rose's talk show, which
yes,
I think is one of the best on television. What was that experience like for you?
It was great. You know, the kind of folks that Charlie has. Charlie came to me for golf lessons. And do we have time for a quick story?
Sure, absolutely.
Tony came to me for a golf lesson, and at the end of the day, he said, I'd like to come back tomorrow. I said, I don't have time. I'm booked. He said, what time's your first lesson? It was on a Friday. We were talking about a Saturday. I said, my first lesson is at 7:30. He says, I'll be here at 6:30 when you meet me. I said, yes. So I met him, and then he came the following Wednesday. Charlie is a public person. Received a lot of golf tips, so to speak. Is a brilliant guy, wonderful to be around. But after the lesson on Wednesday, he said, "This is a very different approach. Can we go on TV and talk about it?" And he asked me to come on the show to talk about the difference, not so much in golf, which we did touch on, but the difference between a learning environment and a teaching environment. Which I said earlier, most teaching environments assume that something is broken and something is missing and it has to be replaced or filled. Where a learning environment, learning developing environment just accepts what is and polishes it along the way of growing it. Nothing is broken, nothing needs fixing. In a SMART classroom, SMART stands for students' minds are really talented. And they are. They all work at a different pace. A 30 handicapper gets the same background that I have as a tour player gets. But the tour player is a very different kind of student. If it was the teacher, there'd be more people winning the U.S. Open. It's not the teacher who has the time, who has the talent. If you have those kind of people walk into your life, you're blessed. And as I said, if it was the teacher, there'd be more people winning the U.S. Open or the club championship. So Charlie, because he had taken some instruction from me, he wanted to bring me on the show and talk about the brain research, and talk about the difference between learning and teaching. And it got quite a response.
Yeah, well, clearly, I'm sure that this will get quite a response as well, Michael. It is an absolute pleasure to talk to you, and there's no doubt in my mind now, having had this conversation, why you're being honored and put into the PGA Professionals Hall of Fame.
If people are interested, then go on my website and the blog. Neuro Learning Live is the blog. Neuro Learning for Golf Live is the blog, and it's kind of gone viral. And the website is, www.michaelhebron.com.
Right. It's right. I'm looking at it right now.
I listen to it when I can, and you're doing great things for golf with this show. Thank you for doing it.
Well, thank you. I would love to come shake your hand when I'm in South Florida next week.
Well, please do.